Now, still to come, we'll also be finding out why not all volcanoes involve streams of red-hot lava, because some instead produce millions of gallons of mud. Plus, we'll also be talking about hot stuff in another way, which is that in this week's Question of the Week, Diana O'Carroll will be finding out whether burning your food can actually help you to shed some excess calories.
But first, we've already heard how analysing volcanic gases can help us to predict future eruptions. But what about earthquakes, seismic activity? Here's Mira Senthilingam.
Just before a volcano erupts, there are often earthquakes of varying intensities. Scientists had already realised that the movement of molten rock, or magma, can often cause these quakes. But what they hadn't realised was that even at very high temperatures, when you'd expect magma to be soft, it can still fracture like brittle rock. And it's the vibrations triggered by these sudden fractures that go on to become the earthquakes that scientists pick up. This was discovered recently by UCL researcher Professor Peter Sammons, using his very own laboratory-based volcano.
Well, what we did was in the laboratory actually try and simulate the conditions of a volcano. Pressures up to a few megapascals, temperatures up to 1,000 degrees centigrade and even higher.
In front of us, we've got a rather large metal structure with dials on one side, and in the centre, there's large metal cylinders with larger cylinders kind of sprouting out from the top, and it's all connected to a computer as well. So how did you actually go about recreating volcanic conditions with this metal instrument?
Well, the lower part's what we call a pressure vessel, so that contains a gas at high pressure. We put the rock specimen in there, our typical sort of test specimens, cylindrical cores about 25 millimetres in diameter, about sort of 75 millimetres in length. We then heat the specimen up with an internal furnace to sort of 900,000 degrees centigrade. Then we have the piston, which is driven down onto the rock sample until the rock starts to fracture. And then using an acoustic transducer, it's a bit like a microphone really, listening to the acoustic activity or microseismicity to see how the rock at this very high temperature was fracturing and then sort of the nature of that fracturing.
We have two of the samples that you actually used during the experiments. What are these?
Well, we used two quite contrasting samples. We've got a sample of lava from Mount Shasta in North America, which is a crystalline lava that's called an andesite. And also we used an obsidian, which is a glassy lava from Krafla in Iceland. So in a sense, these represent the two end members of rock types you might wish to look at, a glass on one hand and a crystalline rock on the other.
So having actually put the samples inside and recording the seismic activity, what did you find?
First of all, of course, we actually found that we could actually get these rock samples fracturing up to about 1,000 degrees centigrade. It's actually showing that actually you do get fracture at very high temperatures in rock. So we could deduce certain types of earthquakes or maybe caused by this high-temperature rock fracture. The second thing I think we showed was that we had the patterns of seismicity coming up towards fracture and had particular characteristics about them, sort of indicative that a through-going fracture was going to occur.
So what volcanologists are now hoping is that if we can understand these patterns of activity a bit better, we'll be able to predict when a volcano might be about to erupt.
Mira Senthilingam talking to Peter Sammons there from University College London about their earth-shattering discovery that even hot magma, the molten rock beneath a volcano, can shatter and trigger earthquakes.
Boom, love the pun. This is The Naked Scientists with Chris Smith and with Richard Van Norden.
We're talking about the science of volcanoes this week, so don't forget to have a go with Ben and Dave's kitchen science experiment. We'll be catching up with them again later, but just to remind you, inflate a balloon, bury it in a pile of flour, and then use some scissors to snip off the neck of the balloon. Please let us know what happens. Email Chris at thenakedscientists.com.
And incidentally, we've heard from Crystal Falcon, who tried the kitchen science of volcano effect, and says it obviously blew some flour up, but what I wasn't expecting is how it all collapsed. So there's the key clue to the observation you're going for. So just to remind you, put this balloon that you've blowed up, neck upwards, in some buried flour, trim off the neck, and tell us what happens, if assuming you can see through the pile of dust that you get afterwards.